Cape Talk.
Weather with Simon Gear.
Cape Town starting off at 19, reaching a high of 33. I saw some magnificent photographs of Cape Town yesterday from a friend of mine who lives down there, showing off the beaches saying what a lovely city it was, at this time of year. And the same sort of thing today. The southeaster is going to be blowing a little bit, so that sometimes changes the atmosphere somewhat, about 30 k's an hour, but clear blue skies. And as I said, Cape Town at 33, Fredendal 40 degrees, Langebaan also at 33, and Tumanus a much milder 24. They're actually cloudy through some of the day. George and Knysna getting a few patches of drizzle and some mist later on in the evening along that very southern Cape coast, that Cape Agulhas coast. Looking ahead, clear skies again tomorrow, partly cloudy skies on Tuesday, and cloudy start for the day on Wednesday, and the temperatures just dipping a little bit, mid to high 20s, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. If you are traveling, high 20s and low 30s across the interior, wherever you go, Durban's a bit milder, a high of 23.
Weekend Breakfast.
Weekend Breakfast with Africa Milani on Cape Talk.
If you're a trustee or an owner in a sectional title scheme and have any concerns, queries, questions, you're most welcome to give us a call now on 021-446-0567. Zelinda van der Merwe, as indicated a moment ago, is a specialist community schemes consultant at Paddox. Zelinda, lovely to have you on the show again. Good morning.
Good morning, Africa, and thank you for another opportunity to chat to your listeners.
Today, we're exploring the, I suppose, concerns, matters around the liability when it comes to the fiduciary relationship between the body corporate and the trustees. Can sectional title trustees be held personally liable for their decisions?
So in our consulting department and our Paddox Club, we are often asked this very question about whether sectional title trustees can be held personally liable. That's quite a scary thought, unfortunately, for their decisions and their actions or even their failure to take decisions or to act in certain circumstances. Now, under our new legislation that's been around since the 7th of October 2016, the Sectional Title Schemes Management Act, this question has been clarified quite substantially to what it used to be under the previous Sectional Titles Act. In terms of this act, as you said, a trustee stands in a fiduciary relationship to the members of the body corporate, which means that they have to act honestly and in good faith in their dealings with the members of the body corporate and on behalf of the members of the body corporate. That sounds easy enough, doesn't it? But as the elected trustees exercise certain powers directed or restricted by their members and perform their functions, they have to make sure that they always do these things in the interest and for the benefit of the members of the body corporate and not exceed these powers. Most of the trustee powers are limited in that they have to revert to their members for resolutions or written consent, but there is quite a lot that the trustees can take decisions on without going back to their members.
Can you give us an example or two, Zelinda, where the trustees will be able to make decisions without necessarily consulting the members? And obviously those decisions now, it seems, they can be held personally liable for.
Sure. So when it comes to trustee decisions that have quite a big effect on the members, and what we very often hear about and have problems with is the raising of a special levy. So in each body corporate, the members know what they're going to pay on an annual basis because they're part of the process of approving the budget and they know what their levies are going to be. But during the course of the year, at any point in time, the trustees can raise a special levy, something that the members weren't aware of and something that they haven't budgeted for. So very often that very topic is a cause of a lot of heated debates in sectional title schemes.
All right. And of course, where the trustees have to consult the membership, right, either at an annual general meeting that they have to call or at a special meeting to make a specific decision, the decisions taken as a group, those trustees then cannot be held personally liable for.
That's correct. So when it comes to being held personally liable, it's the decisions that the trustees have to take, or perhaps even that they act against the decision that the members have taken. So some of the things that the trustees have to ensure that they avoid to not be held personally liable, first and foremost, is they need to avoid any material conflict of interest in relation to their body corporate. And this is very often the decision experienced in schemes. They can't receive a direct or indirect personal economic benefit from the body corporate. And should they have a material interest in a contract or decision of the body corporate, they need to notify their fellow trustees, as soon as they're aware. And in this regard, if they do have an interest, they can't be present at or take part in any consideration conversations, discussions, decisions of a matter that they have this interest in. I've got an interesting one. I used to be a litigation attorney and my body corporates appointed me to do some of their work. I had to make sure that I recused myself from the trustee meeting where they decided to use my services. I needed to make sure that when they were instructing me, I wasn't part and parcel of that process. And then, of course, when it came to the payment of my invoice at the end of the day, I needed to leave the room and not take part in that decision, not tell the fellow trustees, I did a good job, please pay my invoice. I needed to recuse myself from that. So that's one thing that happens very often in a body corporate where a trustee has an interest in a matter and they don't remove themselves from the situation of taking that decision or signing that contract. And in that regard, they can be held personally liable should the body corporate suffer any loss, economic loss, or that trustee receive any economic benefit as a result of this breach.
And you have to document, obviously, and show that you've done absolutely everything required by law and beyond to make sure that that conflict of interest, one, is declared, and as you say, you've accused yourself of all the decision-making processes that determines that your company, your organization, is the one that is going to be deriving financial benefit from that.
Yes. So what I say to my clients very often is, if this is a decision that's going to be taken at a trustee meeting, make sure that the minutes reflect that at a certain part of the meeting, whoever had an interest recused themselves, that they left the room, that the discussion took place without them, that they weren't part of that vote, that when the items moved to a different subject or when the meeting moved to a different subject, they came back into the room again to take part of it, that they were recused from the email thread that approved an invoice payment, for example, that they're part and parcel of. The minutes of the body corporate reflect what the decisions and the discussion were at trustee meetings. So that's the place that they need to make sure in writing it's documented they weren't part of it. Of course, their signature can't be on a trustee resolution or on the contract with that they're interested or involved in as well. So throughout the document trail or the paper trail, it needs to be clear that they have notified the body corporate, notified their fellow trustees, and of course recused themselves from this decision making. Otherwise, the body corporate must indemnify a trustee against all of these costs and losses and expenses that they might be affected by once they're aware of all the material facts of the potential breach or the interest in writing. They can approve the trustee's conduct, and then it won't be a breach of their fiduciary relationship to the body corporate. So again, when in doubt, rather consult with the members of the body corporate to ensure that later down the line, we're not going to have issues of people accusing you of taking part in a decision that you shouldn't have.
How closely linked must you be to the company that is going to be deriving financial benefit? Obviously, if you're a director, lawyer in that law firm, whatever the case may be, there's a direct benefit for you and the company that you're working for. What happens if you're a shareholder, for example, and you're probably even oblivious to the fact that you're a shareholder because somebody else is taking care of that portfolio of shares that you hold? And by the trustees deciding that this company that Africa Milani is a shareholder of is going to be, the company that we obviously give the tender to, for lack of a better word. Therefore, there will be benefit. It may be in a form of a dividend at the end of the year, but I will be benefiting from it. Is that too far of a line to try and connect the dots with?
Because of the serious consequences of being held personally liable, my motto is always where there's smoke, there's fire, the old saying. And the Sectional Title Schemes Management Act actually now specifically says when you have a direct or an indirect personal interest or material conflict of interest in a decisional contract, you must be recused. And I think that specific reference to direct or indirect means that if you have absolutely anything to do with the decision or a contract, you need to recuse yourself. Rather be safe than sorry. Of course, you don't want to place your body corporate in a situation that as soon as you leave the room, the trustees no longer have a quorum to deal with their business. But that's something that has to be considered when the members decide upon and elect their trustees. That's why it's always a good idea, I think, to know who your trustees are, know where there could be potential conflict of interest. Are they attorneys? Are they engineers? Are they auditors, accountants? Do they have any involvement in the body corporate? I think even taking the example of your shareholding, I dealt with a matter a few years ago that's very similar to that. And my opinion was that that was an indirect interest and that trustee shouldn't be part of the decision. So it could be as strict as that.
Zelinda, I do have one or two more questions, but let me invite listeners to call us on 021-446-0567 if you are an owner or member of a sectional title scheme, if you're a trustee and you have any questions pertaining to your fiduciary responsibility. Give me a call on 021-446-0567 and we'll try and give you some advice. So I have either intentionally or unintentionally found myself in a situation where I'm a trustee of a sectional title scheme and I'm a beneficiary of a contract that we've just awarded. What happens then? I mean, what are the legal consequences, I suppose, to that? And what, therefore, can the sectional title scheme do to try and recover or recoup some of whatever potentially lost money is? And what impact is that going to have on me is actually where I'm going on all of this.
So when it comes to a decision like that, where a contract has already been entered into, you have to, like I said earlier, follow the paper trail. So did that trustee notify their fellow trustees of their interest? Did they recuse themselves from the meeting where that contract was discussed? Were they a signatory to that contract? Did they notify the members of the body corporate of their interest? It's not necessarily a bad thing if you've got a board of trustees with connections, for lack of a better word, or with experience in a certain item that can help the body corporate. So if I'm an engineer and my company is able to offer the service for a lot cheaper than a different company, obviously the body corporate would not be suffering a loss when it comes to that decision. It's only when the body corporate suffers an economic loss I benefit an economic benefit as a result of my breach of a trustee duty like this that I can be held personally liable as a trustee. So as long as everything was done above board, that trustee shouldn't be concerned at all. It's if they were motivating that contract, if they were a signatory to that contract, if they negotiated the terms of that contract, that they should be a bit concerned that if anything goes wrong, that they might be held personally liable in that instance.
And I suppose there is the important consequence where whatever the awarding of that contract is, and therefore the work that needs to be done around that, could now be delayed because of these infringement of processes and law when it comes to something as important as this.
Yes, definitely. That's actually something I dealt with on Friday during a consultation where because of the decision of the trustees, the whole process had to be postponed. They had to go to the members, which means the quotes that they obtained would be out of date. They would have to pay more money. Unfortunately, in a situation like that, the trustees need to make sure that they identify these conflict of interest or material interest in contracts way before the decision needs to be taken. If they do need to go to the members for whatever reason, either to notify them of the breach, alternatively to let the members take the decision on their behalf, there is mechanisms in place under the Sectional Title Schemes Management Act for special general meetings to be called on an urgent basis, less than 7 days, to perhaps notify the body corporate members in writing. I mean, most people have email these days and are contactable every single day. So there is ways and means around it. But unfortunately, if things are not done properly, it can lead to delays, which would lead to economic losses suffered by the body corporate, which is unfortunately what we're looking at when it comes to holding trustees liable.
And Zelinda, before I let you go, a question from a listener who says, I am a trustee. My grandson owns a construction company. Would he be able to receive work from the board of corporate? Should I recuse myself from those meetings or approving invoices?
That would be an indirect interest. So I would definitely say that trustee would need to recuse themselves from the decisions and the discussions relating to that. They couldn't take part in the signature of the trustee resolution authorizing the contract or be a signatory of the contract either. And when it comes to the payment of any invoice payable after entering into that contract, they would need to recuse themselves as well. Obviously, having a family member in that line of work could mean that the body corporate could be offered certain discounts, which would be a positive thing. But unfortunately, they would need to recuse themselves in order to be safe in that type of decision making.
Because, of course, that discount could be seen as a way of advantaging, if you like, that contractor to come out and carry out the job, right?
Exactly. I've often seen where tendering processes take place and somebody with an interest in a contract or a relationship with the body corporate tenders just a couple of rand less because they obviously have the information ahead of time as to what the other contractor's quotes came in as. So that would be the type of thing that recusing yourself from the decisions and getting the information and doing the investigation would prevent.
All right.